Welcome to Voices of Legacy, where we celebrate individuals who display resilience and determination in inspiring us all, hopefully. Today, we honor and introduce to some, as we say in churchdom, and present to others, our own Ohio State Representative and local attorney, Josh Williams, whose remarkable journey from homelessness and adversity, becoming an attorney, exemplifies the power of perseverance and hope. Despite facing significant challenges, including dropping out of high school and sustaining debilitating a back injury, Josh refused, and I can say this by my own experience, refused to let the circumstances define him. Instead, he transformed his mindset, shifting from asking why me, which we all do. I think we've all said, why me? Oh, God, help me, to declaring, why not me? With unwavering determination, he obtained his GED and embarked on a journey of education and self-discovery that led him to the opportunity that we as Ohio citizens have presented to him in electing him as our state representative. At the age of 35, Josh achieved a significant milestone by graduating from law school at the University of Toledo, a college of law. His commitment to education extends beyond his own pursuits, as he now shares his knowledge and passion and his dedication for being an educator, even at Adrian College, teaching constitutional law, criminal law, and criminal procedure. Josh's dedication to serving his community is evident and is exemplified in his current service for the state of Ohio and the community that he still practices law, if I'm not mistaken, in. We welcome today none other, after all of that stuff, than our own Josh Williams. Good afternoon, Brother Josh. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm good. I'm glad to be here. I appreciate the invitation to come and speak with you today.
Oh, thank you for being here. We truly thank you for showing up in the place to answer some questions. We'll promise not to get the room smoky and dim the lights, but we want to talk to you today about your experience. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I'm born and raised here in Toledo, Ohio. I'll give you the elevator speech of my background, which is my dad was 68 when I was born. My mom was just 26. My dad died when I was 5 years old. He was an older man, so he died at the age of 74 in 1990. He was a reverend, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we have our roots in the church. Mm-hmm. So I was raised along with my two older siblings by a single mother. Mm-hmm. Eventually, I got to the point of being a senior in high school. I was an honor student. But I was 18 and out on my own, and I dropped out of high school and I became homeless. I slept on park benches and friends' couches for, 6-7 months till I kind of got back on my feet. Eventually, I met my first wife while she was pregnant with my son, Matthew. I fell 30 feet at work. I was working as a railroad subcontractor and destroyed my spine. So by the time I was 23, I was fully disabled. And from 23 to 29, I laid in bed. Wow. I underwent, I think it was around 42 procedures on my spine, 5 major back surgeries on my spine. I have metal in my spine permanently. And eventually I recovered enough by 29 to where I wanted to get myself out of that bed. And we started to fight with the state of Ohio for over a year because as an injured worker, if you just enroll in college, you will be cut off your disability because you didn't have their permission. So for a year, we fought to get the permission. Eventually, they conceded. And I started college at the age of 30.
So you had to ask permission to improve yourself from that situation?
Correct. They were more
make sense.
They were more content with offering me a settlement and saying you should just be content in living, in poverty and being in pain the rest of your life and taking these pain pills. And I had a different agenda. Mm. So, I fought to get out of that bed and to get myself into college. And I started at the University of Toledo at the age of 30, and at the age of 35, I graduated from law school with 3 degrees. I graduated from undergrad, magna cum laude. I earned a full scholarship to UT Law. I graduated law school early, so in a little over 5.5 years, I gained 3 degrees, including my Juris Doctorate, and got sworn in and started practicing.
Oh, wow. Wow. So your circumstances didn't really disable you. It sounds like it motivated you.
It did, and it motivated me later to go into public office, I had some opportunities that were available to me that weren't available to my peers next door who weren't disabled. Mm-hmm. So by being an injured worker and being disabled, I had non-government organizations, NGOs available to me, such as Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities.
Yeah.
They were the organization that paid for my first 2 years of college education and my books. They were the ones that kind of gave me the encouragement to be able to try even if I failed.
A program that worked.
A program that worked. And what workers' comp did, workers' comp said, we will agree not to cut off your check for 2 years while you try to see if you can dig yourself out of this 6-year disability and get back into the workforce. And I made a successful transition.
Wow. So how long did it take you?
The recovery period was pretty long. I'm still disabled to this day. I still have injuries. I'm still considered 47% disabled. Mm-hmm. But eventually, in 5.5 years, I got two degrees, an associate's in applied science and paralegal studies, a bachelor's in science and paralegal studies. And eventually, I got my Juris Doctorate with a concentration in criminal law.
So we should say Dr. Josh.
Yeah. As lawyers, we normally don't take that term, but yes, I do have a doctorate, yes.
Dr. J. Awesome, awesome, awesome. So I guess that led you not only to success, but also to, as they say, reach back and make yourself available to the place that you came from.
I thought it was God's intention for me to become a lawyer. Like, there was a lot of things that happened, and there's a thousand layers that I could tell you, but I don't want to occupy too much time, that guided me to become a criminal defense attorney. And I thought that was God's plan for me. Mm-hmm. So then I had already worked in a law firm since 2016. By the time I graduated, I'm working in the same law firm I previously was a criminal defendant in, mm-hmm. a criminal defense client. And I'm at the peak of, what I think should be my happiness. I'm getting ready to get remarried.
Hold on, wait a minute. So you are actually a defendant for the very same law firm that now you're a partner?
Yeah. Oh, I'm an associate.
Associate.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. In my
that's like TV movie stuff.
So in my sophomore year of college, I was coaching in the city, mm-hmm. in a league called the Stars League, South Toledo Area Recreational mm-hmm. Society. I was a youth football coach and program director, but I also served as the secretary of our executive board. And we had a young lady that got suspended from our league for a year for violating our anti-bullying policies. And me as a secretary, I had to write her letter of mm-hmm. suspension. And she went and started a competing league to us. And we found out she was dating one of our coaches and was taking equipment out of a locker.
Oh, wow.
So my board ordered me as a secretary to go and get my name put on the locker, take the equipment that remained, inventory it, and let them know what was stolen so we could try to sue her or go after her criminally. So I did that in broad daylight. I went and got my name put on the locker. I went with my 10-year-old son. We removed all the equipment. I inventoried it. I did everything I was told to do. Somehow she convinced them to put her name on the locker 3 days later and went and filed a police report saying, I stole 3 days earlier. So for a year, I had to fight two felonies. I was a baseball coach at Start High School at the time, coaching JV. I lost that job because of these pending felonies. And I had to fight for my name. And eventually, once I got indicted and once it went to Common Pleas Court, I was able to produce evidence that showed, one, my name was on the locker. Two, her name didn't go on until 3 days later. So when I went in, I was the only person's name on the locker. I can't steal from myself. And the case was dismissed and eventually sealed. And then long story short, the judge that was in charge of that case, Myron Duhart, became one of my law school professors.
Wow.
I took his class in trial practice. I took top honors in that class, what we call booking in law school. And he swore me in as a practicing attorney. So I still work in the same law firm that I walked through the door as a criminal defendant. I still work with my boss and mentor, Stephen Groth, who was my attorney back then. And he essentially gave me an internship based off of the work that I did on my own case, showing how dedicated I was and how kind of creative I was towards defense. So I started as an intern there. I worked myself into a paralegal role, an undergraduate. I eventually became a law clerk when I hit law school. And then now I'm a practicing attorney in our criminal defense division.
So adversity seems to be your inspiration no matter what. That's pretty awesome. I've experienced some experiences in the courtroom myself, and I can attest to that. It can be very frustrating when you know that you're justified in your position, but you have to go through the process. And it forces, and I'm not trying to be an attorney, but it forced me to really read some case law. And my attorney's okay, but I want this dude to make this happen. And I was fighting for custody of my son. Mm-hmm. And I think you've had some similar circumstances. So I can definitely relate to that. That is amazing. And I think it's inspiring. You know, don't let adversity stop you. Let it inspire you. It's like medication or the impetus to move forward in life. So in all that, what led you to politics?
So, you know, when I started practicing, I was 4 months away from my wedding to my beautiful wife. And I felt so empty being a criminal defense attorney. Mm-hmm. I had this idea I was going to go and fix this criminal justice system, being a criminal defense attorney and fighting for those that are innocent like myself. And I got into a system that's just so messed up, so corrupt, so evil, that I felt like I was profiting off of other people's pain. And it made me feel empty on the inside. And I used to pray to God about it. I'm like, this couldn't have been your purpose for me. It couldn't have been. Mm-hmm. And I remember about 4 months before our wedding, and we had a beautiful wedding, 450 guests. You know, an expensive wedding. I went to my wife and I said, I don't want to be a lawyer anymore.
You can't see his eyebrows just raising when he said expensive, but it was nice.
It was a beautiful wedding, but expensive. And I went and told my wife, I don't want to be a lawyer anymore. And she, no uncertain terms, told me, and I remember this, suck it up, buttercup. And, you know, she told me, hey, this is what you went to school for. People pay you for your experience, blah, blah, blah. And I said, okay. And I sucked it up and we got married. And the feeling just kept being there. I had already had that feeling. That's why I became a professor. I thought that was going to fill that void. And then
you could tell there was more.
I could just tell that wasn't what he had intended for me. Like, maybe that's what he wanted me to do, but it wasn't all that he had. It wasn't the complete assignment that he had over my life. So I used to look back on all those obstacles I overcame. You know, why'd I have to have a single mother? Why'd my dad have to die of cancer when I was young? Why'd I have to be impoverished? Why'd I have to have dead roaches surgically removed from my ears? Why'd I have to drop out of high school and sleep on park benches? Why'd I have to fall at 21 and destroy my spine? Why'd I have to go through a divorce after 15 years of a relationship and 13-year marriage? Why, God, why me? And something just shifted in my mind. And it's like, maybe these obstacles that I see as insurmountable, maybe those were just challenges to get me prepared for the assignment that God had for me that would take dedication, determination, right? Resiliency, and a kind of a I don't care attitude when I get opposition to my positions. I just started praying about it. Okay, if this isn't the assignment, you know, just like digging myself out of that bed, I made a promise to you that if you gave me the opportunity, I would work my butt off to get out of this bed. If you give me the opportunity to go down whatever path you have for me, I'll see it and I'll pursue it. And almost instantaneously, I had people coming out of the woodworks like, hey, we heard you're considering running for office. And I'm like, you're a liar. I'm not even a party affiliate at that point. I'm an independent. I never voted in a primary intentionally. But people had heard about my conservative views. I've been a member of the Federalist Society when I was in college. I was very vocal when I was in law school about my conservative views. And I guess it started to catch on in the city. So people were coming up saying, hey, we heard you'd be a great candidate. And I thought about it and I prayed about it. And when I went to my wife this time, 4 months after our marriage, and I'm like, hey, there's a deadline coming up. There's this open seat. Maybe I should go into politics. And she said, absolutely.
Really?
She said, it's not every day that people that look like us get this opportunity.
That's true.
Especially as a Republican.
Yeah.
If you are going to get the support of your party, you have my support. So I made a trip to Columbus, and before I even declared my candidacy, I went and met with the Ohio Republican Party about potentially running. And by the time I drove back to Toledo from Columbus, word was already spread in my county that I was the candidate for District 41.
Wow. So did you think you were going to win?
Yeah, because I felt like it was God. I wouldn't have ran if I didn't think it was God's assignment for me. And everything he's done for me that's been an assignment that came from him.
Because you know you, Michelle, you pretty much made history.
Yeah, it was 50 years since we had a black Republican in the House of Representatives and over 30 years for the Senate.
Yeah.
And that was unfortunate, you know, that for half a century we had no representation in rooms where decisions were being made that affected our community.
That's right.
And now I get so much pushback, not from people that look like me. I get a little bit. But a lot of pushback I get is from white liberals who almost believe like they own me. Yes. Like, you know, they own my struggle and what I've overcome, and that I should have brought that message to their party.
Or what you are supposed to do, or what you are supposed to think.
Yeah.
I receive the same thing, because, you know, we relate on that level. So when I first met you, I think, was it at the IMA meeting?
It was at the IMA meeting.
IMA meeting. And I was shocked and amazed, and I can't go into too much detail, at what the candidate that you were running against said about you in your absence.
Yeah.
And I called you immediately. I was like, man, I got to find this guy's telephone number. Stuff like that is, I agree with you, it's very motivational to make change in a way that's not common, because really true change, effective change, in my opinion, is never common. You never find your blessing in a comfortable place.
Mm-hmm.
So you're inspiring me just hearing your story. So what's your vision moving forward in your position?
So, I mean, I've been very active so far in a couple of different areas. One is criminal justice reform. You'll see a ton of bills that come out of my office on criminal justice. And when I say criminal justice reform, it's got this negative connotation of, like, letting criminals walk free.
Yeah.
That's not what I mean. I mean literally reforming our system when it comes to sentencing of certain criminals and when it comes to relieving sentences of others. So I'll give you an example. You know, we introduced a bill when it comes to human trafficking called the Human Trafficking Prevention Act, myself and Representative Nick Santucci. When I became vice chair of criminal justice in the House, I also serve on the Sentencing Commission through the Ohio Supreme Court. I've also been assigned to the Bail Reform Commission. I think as a vice chair of criminal justice, it's my responsibility to look at every statute. And I'm looking at these statutes, some that I've faced as a criminal defense attorney and some that I haven't. And I saw, I'm like, wow, a person could abduct a child with the intention to have sex with that child against their will, and you can prove that, and they face a potential 3-year sentence in Ohio.
Wow.
I said, that's crazy that a man not only can try, but actually succeed in abducting a child.
Mm.
And you can prove they had this evil intent, and they face a potential 3 years? No. They should face life in prison.
Yeah.
We're getting a predator off the street. So we introduced the Human Trafficking Prevention Act, which takes increases penalties for kidnapping, abduction, and engaging in human trafficking to potential life sentences in the state of Ohio. Now, at the same time, I'm trying to do other things like make it easier for you to remove felony convictions off of your record for first-time offenders, right? Trying to make those automatic instead of you having to realize you're eligible, pay a lawyer like myself to go represent you and get your record sealed. At the same time, I'm trying to reorient our criminal justice system towards three groups of offenders. One, we just talked about, sex offenders. That's a major one. Two is our violent offenders, right? And three is our repeat offenders. So we have a bill that we're introducing on Tuesday. We'll have a press conference in Columbus, and it's called the Repeat Offender Act. What it's targeting is individuals that are felons that continuously get caught with firearms.
The revolving door.
The revolving door.
In Toledo, oh my goodness.
So, you know, 90% of our violent crimes are perpetrated by individuals that are in illegal possession of firearms. They are not legally allowed to possess firearms because they already have convictions that bar them. But yet when we catch them before they do a new crime, they only face up to 3 years in prison. And the first time, they only get around a 9 to 12 month sentence if they get jail at all.
Wow.
The second time, they still only face up to 3 years. The third time, still only up to 3 years. The 12th time, still only up to 3 years.
And this is probably why there isn't a healthy respect for the law. I know that you probably already know that we're very involved through our ministry in inspiring a healthy communication between the community and our law enforcement. We have a coffee with cops again, and we try to inspire people to come. Let's treat each other like human beings so that we can respect authority and authority can respect us, because at the end of the day, they work for us just like you do. You are a representative of the state. We have to get that respect back. But if we're letting felons out over and over again, they don't respect anything.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially when those are the people perpetrating crimes in our community.
Yeah.
When our children are dying because of gang violence inside of our community, and those individuals are being pulled over with guns, and they're barely facing anything. They get arrested that night, they get out that same night, they're back in the neighborhood the next day with another firearm.
Yeah, and you're empowering them
to
commit crimes.
So instead, you know, groups want to, you know, villainize legal gun owners like myself and say, the reason is because all these guns are available. Guns are always going to be available in this country because we have a Second Amendment. What needs to happen is when we have violent criminals in possession of it, or you use a gun in the commission of a violent offense, you need to start putting these people behind bars for decades at a time, especially these repeat offenders. So, I mean, I looked at some of the statutes using a fully automatic weapon in the state of Ohio, 6 years. 6 years for a fully automatic modified weapon. Using a suppressor in the commission of a crime, 6 years.
Wow.
6 years. And I'm like, no, that should be 10, 15, similar to what the feds have. So we have a bill that's being introduced that is going to, in our belief, help when it comes to gun violence. At the same time, it gives an automatic ceiling of felony fours and fives after a certain period of time. You're eligible for 5 years to file for your record to get sealed, but after 5 years, it should automatically come off, right? And there's some other provisions. And so that's one of my big goals is reshaping our criminal justice system. The next goal is workforce development. And I kind of have a unique perspective because I watched how things worked with me. So one thing was it was the threat of you taking away my disability check that would have kept me out of college.
Wow.
It would have kept me in poverty. It would have kept me in that bed. And it would have made it where I didn't go out and try to find a job. Because the threat of you taking away my assistance. Instead, what happened was they gave me 2 years to go out and get an education and come back and make as much money. That's one example of workers' comp. Two is Social Security. I received Social Security disability at the same time. Social Security has a transitional program that we don't have in the state of Ohio when it comes to our social net system, which is when I decide to try to get out there and work, there's a 9-month period, consecutive months, or 11 months in a 36-month window where I can make as much money as I can and I don't lose my check. It's guided towards me building up a nest egg so I can prove to the government that I can sustain myself. And if I get off the system, even if I had a bad month, even if I get laid off, I have a nest egg of 9 months of income that I should have built up into a savings, right, for myself, and it made that transition. And I was successful. When I made that transition off of the system, I've never been back.
So you're saying that does exist or it
that,
should?
That exists on Social Security disability.
But not on the state?
Not in Ohio. So we have a bill, myself and the minority assisted leader, Gerald's, we introduced a hand up. Which is a pilot program that says, hey, if you're on our public assistance, we're gonna give you this window of 6 to 9 months where you can continue getting your benefits so long as you try to go out there and get gainful employment. Get yourself off the system because I'll use flat numbers. We don't want a limit that says if you make under $1,000 a month, you can get government assistance. But if you make $1,001, you lose $1,700 of government assistance. I'm pretty sure if you're a thoughtful person, you're going to say, I'm going to guarantee I'm going to make under $1,000.
Yeah. Well, that's what people do.
Because if I make $1,001, I'm losing $1,700. Instead, I can make $999 and keep my $1,700.
Yeah.
And we're making people make these economic decisions. And then you say, well, why are people staying in poverty? Because you've incentivized them to remain in poverty.
That's true.
Right?
Well, man, we've talked about a lot, and we're rolling up on the end of our program. But I have to ask the question, other than are you still teaching?
I still teach.
Perfect, perfect.
I still practice, too, and good. I legislate.
Good, good, good. How do you balance all of that? So I know I'm supposed to be closing, but how do you balance all of that?
I pray to God every day that my body holds up. I laid in bed for 6 consecutive years. I lost my entire 20s, so I'm making up for lost time.
Yeah.
I got a lot to do. And bringing people to his kingdom, giving him glory in every room that I walk into, and trying to complete this assignment that he's given me. I don't know if it's a 2-year assignment in the legislature. I don't know if it's 4, 6, 8, 20. Maybe it's in a different role. I don't know.
Well, who
but
knows?
I'm going to keep praying. I'm going to keep praying about it.
Governor Josh, who knows? you never know. You never know. But nevertheless, to the big question of the hour as we wrap up this time together, and I appreciate you coming and sharing so much with us. What do you think your legacy is right now?
Right now, it's my legacy is the ability to overcome adversity, to reject this victimhood mentality that is plaguing our youth, and instead take on individual autonomy and individual responsibility, claim ownership of your own life, your own success, and work your butt off to overcome. And part of my legacy is I'm going to fight tooth and nail to put programs, policies, procedures, rules, statutes in place that can help you overcome so long as you are a motivated Ohioan.
Wow.
A motivated Ohioan, there's going to be a way for you to dig yourself out on your own.
No matter your skin tone, no matter political affiliation.
Nothing. Yeah. Doesn't matter. We want you to reach your God-given potential instead of the other way, because I've seen it, where government gets in the way and suppresses your potential to keep you in poverty, keep you relying on them so you keep voting for them in office.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's got to be a reason for this. There's always, somebody's benefiting. Well, you've answered both questions. What would you like your legacy to be would be the next question, and that sounds like a pretty hefty, well, menu of legacy that you have before you, not behind you. And just looking at you, and we're going to share some pictures for those that are on. He's a married man. He's a married man. But you don't look much more than 20 now.
Well, I'm getting ready to celebrate my 40th birthday.
I know. but we thank God for you. We truly do. And your mission and your commitment to what you do. I think that there's another story there someplace, maybe a movie, hopefully not Lifetime, but a movie in the works, or book or something of that nature for you. We thank you for being with us today. State Representative, what do we call you? State Representative?
I go by Josh.
I know that.
You can call me Representative Josh Williams.
But there we go. Representative Josh, the Honorable Representative Josh Williams in the building today here on the Voices of Legacy. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me. It was an honor.
Thank you for listening to the Voices of Legacy. This is your friend, Pastor Carl Mitchell III, your host of this program. We want you to go to wgte.org/legacy to like, share, subscribe, and hear all of our past podcasts and our future podcasts. Be a friend and join with us in the Voices of Legacy, where you're writing your own legacy every day that you live. Have a blessed day.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.